Coming up on this episode of DL Weekly, magic key sales resume, new details on upcoming festivals, Tale of the Lion King roars away.
Lightning Lane coming to a classic attraction, we talk to Disney author Alexandra Munier and more. DL Weekly starts now.
Well, hello there. Welcome to our unbirthday party. For your safety, please be sure to stay listening with your hands, arms, feet, and ears inside the podcast. And please, do give Tag and Teresa easier trivia questions. Well, it seems DL Weekly is about to begin. Have a most wonderful time. Perhaps tea time.
Hello and welcome to this episode of DL Weekly for the week of January 10th, 2024. I'm Teresa Urban.
And I'm Tag Bushman. We'd like to thank everyone who supports the show. This week, we would like to give a special shout out to Mary H., Cody L., Alex W., and Shannon W. for supporting the show. If you would like to help support the show and make sure that we can keep bringing you the latest news and information, discussion, and interviews about Disneyland, head on over to dlweekly.net/support.
Now let's get to the news. Magic key sales will resume on January 10th, 2024. That is the day that this episode goes live. All four levels will be available no earlier than 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. Prices range from $4.99 for the Imagine key up to the Inspire key at $16.49. So depending on your key level, perks can include things like discounts on food and merchandise purchases, parking discounts, photo pass, special offers just for key holders, and more. To learn more information, check out the link in our show notes.
Yep. So, of course, sometimes the magic keys aren't available for purchase. They're going to be available for purchase.
And usually they go pretty fast. So
that's true.
It may be by the time this episode posts midday, some of these might already be sold out.
That's true.
Crazy. So may the odds be in your favor for those of you that are trying to get a magic key today.
Yeah. So one of the main differences between the different levels is how many reservations you can hold at a time. The Imagine key has two reservations at a time. The Enchant key has four. The Believe key has six. And the Inspire key also has six. Different levels do parking, different levels of parking discount or free. There's different merchandise percentages at each level, different food and beverage percentages. At the two higher levels, you get photo pass included.
Yeah.
And some Genie Plus discounts of 20% off. At the lower tiers, you get discounts off Genie Plus and some discounts off parking. So depending on where you want to be, you know, I would also say with the higher prices as they are, look at the blockout calendar and determine how many days do you plan to go and what days are blocked out. And if you're getting a key just because you have some of the dates are going to be available that you need, maybe like a regular day ticket might actually end up being more affordable over the course of the year.
Yeah, so Tag and I were actually just talking about this before we were recording. We currently have the Believe key. Previously, we had the Enchant key. And so the Believe to Enchant's quite a jump. It's about $400 between, you know, just between that those levels. And that's, we didn't even skip a level. That's just level two to level three. And just out of curiosity this time round, I decided to look at, okay, what trips did we do versus, you know, when we were there, how many days were we in the parks? If we would have paid out of pocket for ticket prices, what would we have been spending versus what we spent on the key? Now, it's very hard to try and figure out things like, well, we saved this, you know, we bought this much food or this much merchandise while we were there too. So we also saved this additional 10%. That I didn't keep that. I did not factor that in because I did not want to have to try and go back and see how much money we were spending on the extra things like that. But yeah. Just entrance level wise, we broke even, actually. So we were a little bit ahead because of the 10% discounts that we were able to get on stuff. But now looking into the next year when we have so late, it's the fall that our keys renew. So we might be looking at stuff and going, OK, well, this is when we're wanting to go. This is what the blackout calendars actually look out. Does it make sense? Because, you know, these keys are getting a little bit more spendy and those blackout calendars are getting a little bit more, we'll say colorful. There's not as many open days for those lower passes as there were. I want to say I was looking at the Enchant key, and there's, I don't remember if there were any Saturdays. If there were, there were very, very few. Same with Sundays. So if you're a weekend person, you got to take that into account versus if you like going on the weekdays. So Lots and lots and lots of things to consider.
Yeah, so Enchant blocks off almost every Saturday and like all of summer.
Do you see I don't think I see a single Saturday that's available yet.
I do not see any Saturdays. This one's passed, so it doesn't matter.
That Saturday's passed, so we don't know. So potentially there was one Saturday available, but no Saturdays available on that Enchant level key anymore.
So Believe is at the next...
Believe's the next level up.
Okay, so that has Saturdays, some Saturdays, not all Saturdays.
Yeah, it looks like there's one or two a month that's not available in the spring. It looked like Saturdays for the summer are a no-go, and then opens up again for fall, and then Saturdays, and then, well, just the end of the year holiday times gets a little
Imagine key, basically, you're limited to Monday through Friday most weeks, it looks like. And, like, all of summer's blocked out. A good chunk of October is blocked out. A good chunk of, like, all of December's blocked out. Yeah. So the Imagine key is not great. And then this is the old one, right, that they had to keep. Interesting. Anyway.
So, yeah, those blockout calendars, I feel, are getting... I don't even know how to say it. I'm just going to say colorful because there's more blocked out dates than there had been before.
Yeah.
I know, just you and I, when we upgraded to the Believe key last year, last fall. So I'm saying fall of 2022, not fall of 2024. We were able to go 3 days before the week of Christmas. We were able to go Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, which was perfect. Well, this year, Sunday was a blocked out day. We weren't able to go Sunday. We could just do Monday, Tuesday. And I looked ahead for next year. For 2024, again, the same thing where it's just Monday, Tuesday. So they have been adjusting the calendar even for those higher tiers. So the key, no pun intended, the key is really look at those calendars to kind of figure out when you're visiting the parks to try and figure out what key makes sense for you, if a key makes sense for you.
Yeah. When Pixar Fest comes to Disneyland in April, it will feature vibrant decorations and themed entertainment, celebrating beloved Pixar characters, of course. A highlight of the festival is a new sculpture on Main Street USA featuring iconic Pixar characters like Woody and Buzz Lightyear.
So we're talking about this sculpture, is what they're calling it, is going to be placed where the Christmas tree just was, where
the pumpkin is.
Pumpkin Mickey is. It's right at the beginning of Main Street there in Town Square, that kind of transition point. What do you think about this? It looks like Pixar Fest. It looks very fun and colorful.
You had mentioned it before we started that it is very reminiscent of the design of the...
You're stealing my thunder.
What was it?
It reminds me of the Tower of the Four Winds that Rolly Crump had designed for the 1964 World's Fair. It doesn't look like...
It's a Small World outside.
Yep. It doesn't. I'm just saying it reminds me of it. I'm not saying it's a carbon copy.
No.
But it gives me that same fun, whimsical feel that a lot of Rolly stuff
has. It kind of has that mid-century modern-y kind of deal to it. It looks like the characters, at least in the concept art that they've shown, it looks like the characters are definitely a little more stylized.
Yeah.
It's got a good selection of people there. I like that it's got... Is it... What's the... Maymay?
Maylin,
Maylin as the red.
And a May.
Yep. Of course, it's got the new people from Elemental. So, I mean, it's got some good stuff. Of course, it has Russell.
Yes, Doug and Russell. We also have Dory, and I can't tell. I think that's Dory and Nemo, as well as Squirt.
You're probably missing, what's his name?
Hank. Yes, Hank. Wally and Eve are there, too. I like that they chose characters that kind of span all of Pixar. We've got the more recent characters as well as the original. The ones that started it all. Oh, yep. And Ratatouille's there too.
Yeah. So I think this could be fun.
Remy from Ratatouille.
Yeah. I think this could be fun. It looks like there's going to be some things that move on it, which I think is kind of important because I feel like with the tree, you get twinkles and some of the ornaments moving a little bit. With the pumpkin, there's not really anything moving, but you get the two sides of Mickey's face on either side, depending on what his expression is. So this will be kind of cool.
Well, and it flickers like there's a big candle in it.
Yeah. At night. So this is nice to have some movement.
I think it's also fun too that it looks kind of like a stained glass. Like the big colorful panels are see-through. So it's like a stained glass or like a giant sun catcher, however you want to say that. The other thing that I just noticed too, did you see the flowers that they planted in a planter beneath this? The flowers are reminiscent of Pixar and the Luxo ball. It's yellow, red, and blue. Good job, Disney. It's about the details.
And you know what's funny is I feel like the flowers in real life will look so much better than the concept art because they always do such a great job in the horticulture department.
I have a guilty pleasure when I'm at Disneyland. I love taking photos of the flowers and the plants around there because if you stop and take the time to look, there are, first of all, they're beautiful, but there are some really cool, interesting looking plants. Like I'm thinking things that I've seen in Galaxy's Edge.
Sure.
To like, yeah. Anyways, maybe one of these days I'll post those onto our social media so other people can enjoy my weird obsession with the plants around Disneyland.
Do you have them set up in such a way that you can almost have like a where in the resort am I?
No, I'll have to show you some because like the ones that like in Galaxy's Edge, well, maybe it could be, but there's stuff in the background that probably would give it away. So no. Like Galaxy's Edge, you can see like the building or whatever it is behind it.
But people could say like where in Galaxy's Edge is
That's true. I mean, I might even have a tough time remembering where exactly I was standing in Galaxy's
You can always
Edge
look at the
photo.
GPS for where you took the photo.
There you go. Well, Disney California Adventure is set to reintroduce. One thing I want to mention because I did not put it as its own separate news story. Did you see who is coming for some of these meet and greets for these festivals? I'm going to talk about Lunar New Year as well as Pixar Fest. Have you seen there's new characters coming and I'm very excited about it.
No, I mean, maybe, but not off of your excitement.
So Elemental, the two characters from Elemental.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I've seen. Yeah,
they're coming.
Yep.
I feel really bad. His name's Wayne. I can't remember. What's her name?
Ember.
Ember. Ember and Wayne are both coming from Elemental for Pixar
By
Fest.
The way, can I just say, good job, Tang.
Yes.
For knowing
job.
That one,
that
because I never know any movie,
you don't.
Anything.
That was good. And then for Lunar New Year, I think I saw that Pandamay is coming.
Oh, yeah.
I'm very excited. Lunar New Year, we knew that she was probably coming for
Pixar Fest. Yeah.
But it's been announced that she will be meeting and greeting for Lunar New Year.
I have to say, I think Pandamay is probably like my number two after Baymax. Like, I just feel like
you just want to go like hug them.
Yeah. Like they just seem like, I don't know. I'm excited to see him in the parade because she's going to be moving.
Yeah, I'm excited. Disney California Adventure is set to reintroduce Hurry Home, a Lunar New Year celebration, which is a nighttime show as part of the Lunar New Year Festival starting January 23rd. This special event will be showcased before World of Color 1, which will be returning from a brief refurbishment on January 19th. The Hurry Home celebration will continue through February 18th, aligning with the duration of the festival.
First of all, not directly related to this, but I'm very excited that World of Color 1 is coming back. Yes. Just want to say that.
Yeah.
But also, I don't know, did you see, like, did we ever see Hurry Home? Because they said it's, like, returning. So did we ever see videos or anything of it, or did we see it?
So I've never been to Lunar New Year, so I've not seen Hurry Home, the little pre-show, before. But yes, I do remember reporting on it before. I don't know if I've ever watched a video of it, because I, as you all know, I'm not a big fan of, like, the mist screens projection.
Video, especially.
Yes, especially on video. So I tend to not try to watch, like, World of Color-esque shows on YouTube,
like on YouTube,
just because it's for me, it's really hard to make out the details on the water screens, especially through video. So I do, yes, this is returning. I do remember this from years previous.
Yeah, I don't remember anything about it. You know what? I'm having this moment of, I've been to the parks for Lunar New Year, but I thought it would have been with you, but you've never been for Lunar New Year.
I've never been for Lunar New Year, no.
When did Lunar New Year start? Now I feel like I need to know this. Oh, 1996. Okay, yeah. So at some point, probably before we start the podcast, I've probably done it. Okay. Because I was just curious because of the fact that I distinctly remember seeing Lunar New Year things, and I swore that it wasn't like a video or something. So I was just curious about it. Well, anyway, I just was curious because, like I said, I vaguely remember being in the park for Lunar New Year.
Sure.
But I thought I would have been with you, but I guess it might have been before that, since they've been doing it for so long.
Must have been back when you were living in California still.
So are you excited to try to see this?
Maybe 2025.
Well, I guess we won't be there during that time.
Yeah. Maybe 2025. We'll check Lunar New Year off of our Disney to-do list.
We're still doing a really bad job of trying to pick our trips for this year. We haven't really had a chance to talk
about it. So for everyone listening, this is so off topic, but for everyone listening, Tag and I are going on a little road trip this weekend. We're going down to Chicago to check out the Disney 100 exhibit. And there you go. We've got 4-5 hours of riding in the car, so I think we can
hash it
start
out.
Planning out some trips and some dates.
Sounds good. I mean, we've got a couple calendars together all the events.
We've got our calendars lined up as far as, like, we mapped out when all of the Disney events plus when Disney fan events are, so we can try and figure out, you know, like, when things are.
And can we maximize, like, can we multi-hit something?
Mm-hmm. Is this thing going on during that thing? That there are a couple of times where the stars align that there's
a
multiple
few
things
days where there's
going
a
on.
Bunch,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, hopefully, by the end of this weekend, we will have a better idea.
And you can update the Instagram to have our future dates.
Oh, that's sad, because we have no future dates right now.
The Food and Wine Festival, running March 1st through April 22nd, will offer an array of events. Highlights include tasting seminars, beer education, and tasting seminars featuring various breweries, and wine seminars with experts from different wineries. Additionally, mixology seminars are scheduled at locations like Disney's Carthay Circle Restaurant and Oga's Cantina. That's a different one. There's also a special mixology class, of course, at Trader Sam's Enchanted Tiki Lounge, priced at $159 per person, with events occurring on select dates. Check out the link in the show notes for all of the details.
These are also things that we have never taken advantage of or been a part of, but I just think it's so cool. I just think how fun it is for especially like locals to be able to go visit Disneyland but do these other things also. These are not things that you would normally associate with doing at a theme park. So I think it's really cool that they have all of these different options available. One of the things, I mean, come on. Oga's Cantina, I would go to that just because of the location.
Sure.
But that's how I feel. Like Trader Sam's too. Like I think doing a mixology class at Trader Sam's would be amazing. Doing a class at Oga's, so cool. I'm not a big beer drinker myself. So like a beer tasting or wine taste, I'm not a big wine person either. So
sure.
The beer and wine tasting seminars, not particularly my thing, but man, do they have, I mean, the list is extensive.
Yeah, just to be clear, it looks like these aren't happening at Carthay Circle or Oga's. They're happening at a location that features people from those locations. There's also Lamplight Lounge folks that are going to be there and some other different locations. So, I mean, I think that could be kind of cool if that's your thing. I'm with you, though. I don't really drink that many alcoholic beverages. I do like wines, but I'm very, like, I like just the really sweet wines, and I feel like wine tastings usually are like a variety, and mm-hmm. So I'd like one out of like seven things that I tried.
If
I was lucky. So, but I know there's a lot of people who listen that do enjoy these type of things and like a much wider variety of drink. So I think these things are good. But I wish I was more of a foodie and more of a beverage like person that like liked more things, because I feel like these type of events would be like so cool mm-hmm. to like have all of that. Just
to learn from the bartenders at Oga's or Carthay or Lamplight. I mean, come on.
But I'd also like go watch all the like tasting seminars where they like show you cooking stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's kind of like watching Food Network, but in person, and then you get to taste the stuff. So that's super cool.
Very true.
And now some weird news.
Yeah, I was going to say. So this one, we'll discuss it. I'm just going to read the story and then we'll discuss it. Lightning Lane is coming to the Pirates of the Caribbean attraction while the Haunted Mansion is closed for refurbishment. This decision has sparked criticism, which we will get into it. But critics argue that the move decreases the guest experience and kind of shows what's going on with Little Mermaid right now. I get it in the sense of that side of the park is really hurting because you're going to have two big Lightning Lane attractions that are both going to be down at the same time. So I understand Disney wanting to do something to quote unquote increase the value of Lightning Lane. However, I don't think Pirates shifting to Lightning Lane's the right answer. If I was in charge of the universe, I would have just discounted Genie.
Sure.
I would have given, like, instead of charging, I don't know, $30 a day for Genie, I would have maybe bumped it to $5 a day since you now have two attractions that are not on it. But the decision was made to add Pirates.
So I watched a video that David from Fresh Baked put up because for some reason I had forgotten, even though we report on this stuff, I had forgotten that the Haunted Mansion was going to stay open until
Small World,
January 22nd.
Yeah,
so that's really late.
So right, because what they're doing is instead of taking both Mansion and Small World down to remove stuff, Small World is down, so Mansion's staying open a little longer.
So I had forgotten that basically. Mm-hmm. And so when David was showing video that they had already put up a bunch of construction walls outside of the mansion to start the queue construction, mm-hmm. I was just surprised because I was like, oh, I thought that the mansion was going to be closing right now. So they're doing a lot of stuff because he was talking about your favorite thing. They had the magic tape out there. And the way they were doing the queue is very interesting right now. I don't know if you saw this video. But
I need to watch it because I'm wondering if it might be proving my point of the mansion will be open.
So the back section of the queue after you pass the pet cemetery mm-hmm. and you go into that, like there's that wall and all the queue on the backside. Yeah. That's all closed off right now.
Sure.
And if you're looking at the train station, mm-hmm. the right side of the fountain mm-hmm. all the way to the gate is also blocked off.
Yep.
And so the way the queue works now is they have it set up that if the queue is long, you kind of circle back and forth on the one side of the fountain that's open. Mm-hmm. And then you go in front of the wall.
Oh, sure.
And then you go into the queue and then they single file you down the path that used to go by the pet cemetery, turn you there and come back.
Yep.
But then you go up the stairs and you go down to the back again
and then back.
And so I was like, this is very convoluted in how they've done this. But, you know, it makes sense.
But they're utilizing the space they have.
I mean, that's true. And so I was like, well, why don't they just make more switchbackiness in the main giant walkway? And I realized in part of his video that people who need, you know, a wheelchair or electric card or whatever, they leave that way. Sure. So you have to have a lane for them to exit. Yeah. And so I was like, oh, okay. So anyway, so I was like, that's interesting. But I'm really interested to see like kind of what's going to start because they have a lot of stuff up
there. I don't know. But this is just making me feel like Mansion's not going to be closed the entire time.
But Pirates, which we totally...
Yeah, so the one thing too with this is not the first time that Pirates has tried a fast pass or a lightning lane type experience. And
and they were like, nope, it didn't work.
If history were to repeat itself, it really, really bogged down the standby wait time. I mean, like, I never experienced this, but it appeared to be more of a standstill feeling in the standby. And it's just hard because when you take these attractions, I'm even going to throw Mansion under the bus. When you take these attractions that are already a high capacity attraction, adding lightning lane to anything, it pauses that standby line, of course. But I feel like sometimes with these higher efficiency or higher capacity attractions, it hurts more than it helps in the long run when you're looking at the whole park. So anyway, so we'll see how long this is. I understand their thinking and their thought process, but I don't necessarily agree with it. Yeah. I would have gone, like we already said, I personally, if I would have been in charge, I would have gone a different route and just discounted Genie during the time that the construction was going on, taking these attractions down.
Sure.
But I'm not in charge.
I think I would have just left Genie at the price it is and just be like, you know what? It's a really incredibly good value service that you have already. So,
I mean, there's that too. Because if you went to, say, like Universal, they're jump ahead of the line pass.
Yeah, very expensive.
Wait.
But their VIP tours are cheaper, so mm-hmm. that's kind of an interesting dichotomy there. Well, the Tale of the Lion King show at Disneyland has concluded its run, which is sad because this was a great show. Mm-hmm. This high-energy performance, although smaller in scale compared to previous productions at the Fantasyland Theater, was popular. With its closure, Disneyland currently has no major theatrical productions, as the Hyperion and the Fantasyland Theater are unused, and Fantasmic is set to return on May 24th, so we still got a little bit of time to wait for that. I don't even know if you want to call that a theatrical production, maybe. The park continues to offer smaller scale shows like storytelling at the Fairy Tale Theater in the Princess Fantasy Fair, which I cannot say enough good things about.
Highly, highly, highly recommend. You know, and this is a great time. As much as it makes me sad that we do not have any big shows going on right now at either of the parks. This does make me happy in the sense that this now frees up more time to go and do things that maybe a lot of people don't stop to enjoy, like the Dapper Dans or the Disneyland Band or the Pearly Band or the Awesome Dance-Off or any of the variety of little Marvel stunt shows and such that they've got going on. There's so much like smaller scale entertainment just woven throughout the other two parks that maybe instead of standing in line to then get seated to then watch a big production like Frozen, because I'm trying to think back on last time I watched something at the Hyperion, because it wasn't just whatever the duration of the show was, which they weren't quick over and done with shows. They were
queued outside
probably about an hour.
Yeah, you'd queue outside.
Yeah, you'd be queuing outside.
Then they'd bring you in, and then you'd be waiting there for a while. Everybody got situated, and then
the show would start, and the show again wasn't just a 10-minute thing.
You'd spend at least an hour and a half.
It was a pretty, it was a really well done production. So you know, so that's about. We'll be generous and say you did both in one day. So that's 3 hours of your day that I encourage you to go find and enjoy all of the other smaller scale entertainment that Disneyland has to offer. Does that mean I don't want something to come back to those stages? No, it does not. I'm saying you can utilize this time and focus on other entertainment.
I wish they would come back. So in the Fantasyland Theater, I wish they would come back with something similar to Mickey and the Magical Bag, because that was really good.
That was so fun.
And I wish they'd come back with something. They don't have to bring Aladdin back. Okay, I've beat that dead horse.
I'm telling
you, something
Coco.
Like Aladdin.
Coco would be
so what super character
fun.
In Coco could you have come up with like stuff like the genie? Because I think like you need some type of element like that that keeps updating so people keep going back.
Ector.
Could be like the comedy relief that could change stuff all the time. I thought we'd come up with like a
but
different.
Could you imagine like the puppets? If they did like the puppets,
that's true.
I think it'd be visually very, very cool. Or I'm trying to think, because if we want something that's more like musical, because Coco, there is Encanto.
Mm-hmm.
Encanto. Bruno could be your comic relief.
Yeah, but I'm trying to say like, is there some
visually appealing, tons of popular music?
Yeah.
Encanto. Those are my two lists.
I thought we had figured this out on a previous episode, that we had a character that could have jokes like the genie did, that could like talk, reference like current event things that'd be funny.
Well, this isn't it, but I mean Olaf, because how he like retells stuff. We're going backwards there, but I don't remember if we did or not, but my two votes are Coco and Encanto, because I think both of those would be beautiful. Encanto, I think, would make a lot more sense, because it just feels, I don't know if there actually is more music, but it just feels like there's more music.
Sure.
Because clearly there are songs in Coco, but I just don't know if there's as many.
Sure.
Well, Disneyland has unveiled 10 new culinary delights available starting on January 10th. Over at the Jolly Holiday Bakery, guests can indulge in a Benoni pie, so it's like banana and toffee, strawberry stuffed croissant, cherry vanilla macaron, lemon meringue eclair, chocolate mousse brownie, s'mores tart, and, I'm so glad that they're bringing this back, the beef birria toasted cheese sandwich. Meanwhile, over at Smoke Jumpers Grill in DCA, they are adding a raspberry cheesecake shake, citrus melon punch, and sparkling blackberry lemonade to the lineup. How do people choose? These additions offer diverse flavors ranging from sweet pastries to savory sandwiches, offering something for everyone.
The raspberry cheesecake shake I was reading later for another menu. That sounds amazing.
I thought of you immediately when I read that. Of course, I'm all over the citrus melon punch and the sparkling blackberry lemonade.
Those are definitely
you. The thing that gets me really excited about the sparkling blackberry lemonade is the sparkling lemonade we just had for the Festival of Holidays.
I just know you're very glad to have the beef birra toasted cheese back.
Oh, it's so good. If you have not tried that, you need to try that. Because we have the cranberry refresher from the Festival of the Holidays. It was over at the Hollywood Lounge. It's cranberry and raspberry lemonade with a splash of Sprite. So for some reason, probably because of the lemonade, I'm like, that immediately made me think of that. So I just, in my brain, I've already decided that's going to be delicious. But yeah, over at Jolly Holiday, I'm most excited aside from the birria, is I don't know why, but the banoffee, because it's banana and
coffee, toffee.
It's banana and toffee.
So banoffee.
Banoffee. The banoffee pie is calling my name. I don't know. Mm. I like graham. It's a graham cracker shell filled with dulce de leche, banana cream, and fresh bananas topped with vanilla bean chantilly and toffee bits.
Hmm.
I like all of those things. I did not think I've ever come, like, I've never had them all together, but I don't see why not. Plus, I mean, what a fun name.
I think I'm going to have the strawberry stuffed croissant, because I don't know if you know this about me, but I love a croissant, croissant with spray whipped cream like put on them. So this is close. It's a flaky croissant stuffed with vanilla pastry cream and strawberries. And I love strawberries. So that sounds great. The cherry vanilla macaron's probably fine, but like I want something kind of different. And then, of course, the chocolate mousse brownie sounds delectable as well, which is a chocolate chip brownie, dark chocolate ganache, white chocolate mousse, crunchy chocolate pearls, and white chocolate decoration. Now, the crunchy chocolate pearls I can do without because I don't like crunchy things on my stuff, but whatever. But these all sound good. Again, it does seem like there is a heavily weighted to one side sweet tooth going on.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, Tag, I've got a very serious question. Oh, I've been meaning to ask you this for a while.
Lord.
Are macarons the thing of the past for you?
I can't remember
a time that you were excited about a new macaron.
I think what happened was there was some good macarons, and I like macarons in general. Like, as a category of thing, I like macarons. Mm-hmm. I think what happened was Disney started making, like, too large of macarons. Like, I just want like a little macaron.
Has Disney ever had like the...
They've had smaller-ish ones, but I feel like I had that alien one that was massive. I feel like I had that giant raspberry one.
They're always large.
It was just too big. I want something smaller. And then also, I feel like there was a couple that I was very excited for, mm-hmm. and then when I had it, it didn't reach that level of excitement for me. But I think lately, I don't know.
I can't remember the last time I've been excited about churros. About a new macaron, nor do I remember the last time you got one at the park. So it's been weighing on my mind since that was your thing.
Well, do you know what made me sad was at the Jolly Holiday, they had the macaroon, the Matterhorn macaroon.
Oh, yes.
And that was like such a deal. That was like $2.50. It's like $5 now or something. Now.
I bought one when we were there last time. And it traveled all the way back to Wisconsin.
It's
with
good.
Me. And I it's going to sound terrible. I'm such a bad Disneyland fan. I had kind of forgotten about it because we came back right before the holidays.
Oh.
So there was just a lot going on. And I was like, oh, I thought I was devastated. I thought that it had like got moldy, gone bad, sure. something. And I was going to have to say goodbye and toss out the macaroon. It didn't. It was a little, it was drier, but it's pretty juicy
to begin with. Like moist.
It was still very, very good. So I got to enjoy a little bit of Disneyland back home.
Sure. Well, it's that time again for our friend Eric over at Concierge to catch us up on other Disney news.
Hello, everyone. This is Eric Johnson with Concierge, and welcome to the D180. While Teg and Teresa cover all things Disneyland, in the D180, we take a spin around the rest of the Disney universe, and we do it in 180 seconds. Let's jump right in. We're back. Happy New Year, everybody. I hope you had a restful or exciting holiday season, depending on your preference. It's great to be back with you talking about your next Disney adventure. We start this week in Walt Disney World, where deals abound. I've talked before about how Disney is making it easier to navigate the parks by removing the reservation system for day ticket guests. Sorry, pass holders. They're also bringing back a version of their very popular dining plans. The newest deal released this week is just for the Disney Plus subscribers. If you're not one, you definitely want to sign up. Disney Plus subscribers staying at a Walt Disney Resort this summer will receive a free dining plan for all party members. Deals like this used to pop up from time to time, and they are huge money savers. Not familiar? Listen up. For the purposes of this discussion, know that a table service meal is anywhere you sit down and get served by a waiter or any of the buffet options around the resort. Quick service meals are those where you order at a counter and enjoy it at a table or on the go. Snacks are single serve items like ice cream bars, fruit, or popcorn. All right, the details. The main Disney dining plan gives you one table service meal, one quick service meal, and one snack per night of hotel stay. If you want to enjoy one of Disney's fine dining options or some of the more popular character dining spots, you can combine two table service credits for your meal. This deal is for vacation packages scheduled from July 1st through September 30th. Whether you get a dining plan or a quick service plan depends on which resort you choose. Clear as mud? Give one of our planners a call. Everybody is prepped and ready to walk you through your options. If you're more in the mood for a trip at a different time of year or just a discount on your stay, there are tons of rooms available at Walt Disney World with up to 35% off your trip. Visit for five or more nights from March 25th through October 3rd, and you'll have a wide variety of choices. The discounts vary by resort and by date, so once again, it's probably easier to talk to a concierge planner about your options. For those in for a different adventure, ask about the Disney Cruise Line or Adventures by Disney. For the first time, Disney Cruises will visit Lookout Key in the Bahamas this year. Some cruises are even bringing back Marvel Day at Sea and Pixar Day at Sea as well. We also get to see a new adventure tour in Colombia. There are so many places you can visit and explore with a Disney vacation. I hope you enjoyed our quick spin around the rest of the Disney universe. If you'd like to learn more about these Disney adventures or just have a few questions, please come on over. Visit the social media and websites of both DL Weekly and us, their official travel planners, concierge. We look forward to planning something special for you and yours. I'm Eric Johnson, and this has been your D180.
Thanks, Eric.
I up, down, touch the ground. I think of things to chew. Like honey and milk and chocolate. With a hefty, happy appetite, I'm a hefty, happy poo. A rumbly in my tumbly means it's time for snacks.
Well, for this week's episode of our snack chat...
By the way, I just want to point out, I hope everybody likes our intro to this, because Andy has done an amazing job creating these intros for us.
Absolutely fantastic.
So shout out to Andy. Thank you so much for doing this.
Yes, big, huge shout out to Andy. Well, this week we are going to take a stroll down Main Street and we're going to be talking about the Carnation Cafe, but more specifically, Walt's Chili. Now, this kind of, we were inspired this week because I'll keep this story short.
I think.
Yeah, I will keep the story short. But basically, I was at my local library. A Walt Disney Parks cookbook just happened to be staring me down in the face, so clearly I needed to bring it home with me.
Was this like on a like featured shelf or something?
No, it just happened to be. I was in the cookbook section anyways.
Oh.
And there it was. So, fate. That's what we're calling it. So, first recipe in the book, though, is Walt's Chili. And it is the current version of Walt's Chili that they serve on Main Street at the Carnation Cafe, according to the book. It is not the same recipe that Walt himself would have been eating, if that makes sense. But very, very good. We do have a link in the show notes, for those of you that want to try it out at home, to the Disney Parks blog. They did share the same recipe that was in the books. This is actually what Tag, I, and crew all enjoyed for dinner tonight. Very good.
It was very good.
I made a couple of modifications, mainly because I did not have 3 hours to let it simmer on my stove. So instead, I put it all in the crock pot this morning and let it cook on low all day. And you know what?
You also didn't put diced tomatoes on it, according to this recipe.
I didn't put diced tomatoes on it, but they're in it.
Oh.
Maybe I read the recipe wrong because I put it in. I definitely diced tomatoes and they were definitely inside. I did not read the top.
You pointed this out to me as we were eating it, and so I want to point it out. This has stew meat in it.
It does.
So it's not just like ground beef, which I feel like is in a lot of like mm-hmm. chilies that have meat in it. I'm also not a huge fan of beans in general, but I do eat beans and chili. I can deal with that. And I thought that the ratio of meat to beans to everything else was great.
This is a very hearty chili. There was only one can of pinto beans, and there was a pound and 3/4 worth of meat. So there's definitely more meat than there was beans. I will report back because the plan was that we were going to make two versions of Walt's chili with this recipe. We were going to do the original, which is what we did tonight. But then the plan was to also tweak the recipe to make it a vegetarian friendly option. So omit the beef and we were going to substitute with like the veggie crumbles. So I will report back because I will be honest, I miscalculated when I was reading the recipe and only and did not grab enough of one of the ingredients to be able to make two separate batches. So we'll report back what that's like. And I can also share what we did if we have any other people that listen that would like to know a veggie option for Walt's chili, because they'd also, I mean, come on. What a comfort food. It just warms the soul. I'm sure there are people out there that don't enjoy chili, but it's just such a good, especially like today, we had a snowstorm.
I was just
going to
say we had a snowstorm today. So people don't know that, but chili, warm chili works perfect for that. Also, I think it helped my throat a little bit because today was first day of classes. So it was a lot of talking. And as you can tell from this episode, I am a chatterbox tonight. So the thing that we do want to talk about in addition to Walt's Chili is the Carnation Cafe. The Carnation Cafe has been a fixture of Disneyland's Main Street since opening as an ice cream parlor with the park in 1955. Sponsored by Carnation, it initially featured an ice cream counter and some outdoor seating. In 1997, it transformed into a restaurant specializing in American comfort food. The Victorian-style building offers a charming dining experience with carnation flowers on each table. Signature items include Walt Disney's favorite, Walt's Chili, and popular vegan Mickey Mouse waffles. The cafe also gained attention for its fried pickle appetizers, which I think you enjoy, a Disneyland must-try according to Eater in 2019.
So for the Carnation Cafe, we were actually chatting about this, again, pre-recording. We definitely have, we've eaten at the Carnation Cafe together twice that I can think of off the top of my head. Once during our trip in 2019, and then also during our most recent group trip with Vern and James, we all enjoyed Carnation Cafe breakfast before our VIP tour day. So breakfast is the only thing I've ever had there. I need to make it a point to either enjoy lunch or dinner there. I'll be honest, I think what happens is I only ever think of the Carnation Cafe for breakfast because it's on Main Street. So I'm on Main Street in the morning, and then once I get past Main Street, I kind of forget about it as a dining option because I'm moving on to like whatever is in the lands that we're enjoying. We do come back up to Main Street during the day.
Yeah.
But for some reason, I don't ever remember Carnation Cafe again. So we're going to have to make it a point.
Well, and Carnation Cafe in the morning especially seems to be like a go-to for people to kind of beeline to because they want to get in and get early. And honestly, when one of the times I'd eaten at it previously before we started doing the podcast, they only had the outdoor eating section. So I didn't know that they had the indoor and they just had the outdoor. So some of the items on the breakfast menu for this are, of course, Walt's chili cheese omelet, a breakfast skillet, which I think Vern or James had when we were there, a Mickey-shaped waffle, which I think is what I had when we were there. They also serve buttermilk pancakes, and they have a breakfast sandwich. You can also get their plant-based option is a hot oatmeal, which is served banana and seasonal fruit. For kids, there's silver dollar pancakes, Mickey-shaped waffles, and Mickey-shaped scrambled eggs. And then part of the kids create your own. They also get to choose between seasonal fruit, applewood smoked bacon, and breakfast potatoes. Not the breakfast potatoes I always talk about, but breakfast potatoes. So that's what they have for stuff. They also have a sweet cream cold brew, Teresa.
Yes, they do.
Ooh, an orange cream soda. Yeah. I might have to try this.
So when we were there in May, they had a special menu, and James and I both tried this. It was basically a biscuits and gravy style dish.
That's right.
That had the base, of course, was biscuit. There were some of the breakfast potatoes were on there. I want to say there was like bacon on there,
chives,
scrambled eggs, chives, and then melted cheese. It was very, very good. Very filling, very hearty. And then, yes, I asked them because it was our VIP day, so I didn't want to waste time on the VIP tour stopping to try cold brews. So I asked them if there was any sort of coffee or cold brew. They didn't actually have it on the menu, but she said, yes, we do have one. So it must have been that sweet cream cold brew because it was very nice. It was a very subtle cold brew. It wasn't like, it was sweet and creamy, but it didn't have any other sort of like in your face flavor. Yeah. Like it wasn't vanilla or caramel or, you know, any of that. So I would bet money that it was a sweet cream cold brew.
Have you
seen? Very good. Like to the point of, I want to just stop and get one of those to go on a normal park day when I'm not sitting and having a dining experience at Carnation Cafe.
Have you seen this before? A sweet cream cold brew with ice cream?
No. In fact, I saw that when I was looking at the menu. I'm like, I can have a cold brew with ice cream?
And it's not that much more.
That sounds like a perfect afternoon treat. One of the classic things, too, if you've ever visited the Carnation Cafe, is that they do have red carnations, fresh red carnations at all the tables. And I just think that's such a fun little detail and something that I mean, that's kind of a not really a big thing to do, but also kind of a big thing to do to keep fresh flowers on the table. I mean, come on, again, you're in a theme park.
Yeah.
So the fact that there's fresh flowers on the tables there, I think is just a really cool, really cool detail.
I'm going to quickly breeze through this because I just want to give a quick overview. So for their lunch and dinner menu, their starter soup and salad menu, they have fried pickles, baked potato soup, and Walt's chili. They have a couple choice of gourmet burgers, the Parmesan toasted patty melt, which actually I didn't know they had this and does sound very good. Might be something we have to try on a future trip. The Carnation Cafe cheeseburger. And then under regular sandwiches and entrees, they have a chicken fried chicken, a wedge salad, a fresh catch of the day, a roasted turkey club sandwich, and a braised short rib. They have three plant-based options of a carnation garden salad, a brownie a la mode, and a hearty veggie burger. And for dessert, they have a peach pie a la mode.
How fun.
On the kids menu, they have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, a build your own entree, which for the kids is a hamburger slider, mac and cheese, or french fried chicken tenders. And then they also get to choose between seasonal vegetable, seasonal fruit, french fries, and mashed potatoes. And then of course they have a selection. This is one of the locations that now offers some alcoholic beverages. So there's some cocktails and wines and beers. And then of course, like we said on the breakfast menu, they have the orange cream soda, the cold brew, fountain beverages, and freshly brewed Joffrey's coffee.
Ooh, you just went through all of the offerings. You could be a waiter or server.
Or like an auctioneer person.
No, I was going to say, you could be like, you could work at the Carnation Cafe.
Maybe.
You know the menu so well now that
I just thought when we're covering these things, we should just quickly do it. Because a lot of these places don't have like a billion options. I'm not sitting here reading a menu. It's not the Cheesecake Factory where we'll be here for an hour and a half.
So for me, I think if we are able, maybe we'll have to make it. We'll have to make it. No, I'm not going to say maybe. We will. We will make this a priority to stop and have lunch at Carnation Cafe during our next trip. For me, I think I'm going to start with the fried pickles. I feel like...
You love the fried pickles.
I love fried pickles. I've never had their fried pickles here at Carnation Cafe.
I thought you had.
And it's such a, like, thing, you know? So it's one of the things they're known for. I feel like you'll probably start with Walt's chili because you do enjoy chili at Disneyland.
Maybe, but I think I'm going for the patty milk, and for $20, I feel like it's going to be a big patty
there
milk.
There you go. It probably
And I'll try some of your
You're going to like laugh so hard at me. The wedge salad is what caught me.
You love wedge salads.
Yes, I do. Well, I love salads in general, but the wedge salad was a thing that really caught my eye. I don't know why, but that's probably the like most boring thing on the menu as far as, you know, oh, but you could have this or that or the other thing. But for some reason.
I would be curious because I honestly didn't know that there was any place that sold like fish. So fresh catch of the day. Sustainable fish served with chef's choice of sides. I'd have to check what that would be on whatever day it is.
Yeah. Let us know, either email in or comment on social media. We would love to know your thoughts on the Carnation Cafe. Has this been a place that is a must dine for you? Is this a place that's on your list of places you would love to try on your next visit? Have you tried making Walt's chili at home and how did it turn out? Let us know. You can either, like I said, comment on Facebook or Instagram, or you can send us an email at feedback@dlweekly.net. Well, if you enjoy listening to the show, please consider rating and reviewing us on your podcast app. It helps other Disney fans become weekly tiers and part of the community.
DL Weekly announces the boarding of the Trivia Express, nonstop star speeder service to the moon of Endor. All passengers, please prepare for immediate boarding.
Hello and welcome to Trivia Land. It's good to be here for the first time for me in 2024. Mm. How are you two enjoying the new year so far?
Well, you know, Trivia Land was not very scary last week. We actually had a very pleasant visit. So
it was a lot. We did a lot,
but it was pleasant.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hoping
for another pleasant.
I'm hoping for another good experience.
Yeah, absolutely.
That doesn't sound very convincing, James.
Well, this week's questions are all from a single listener.
Oh,
it was very timely and
someone's an
well
overachiever.
Thought out. So Curtis C sent these questions in. Curtis C.
Oh,
yeah. That does roll off the tongue if you go too quick.
Yeah.
New nickname for Curtis. Anyway, Curtis wrote in, thanks for the great show and I hope you have a wonderful new year. I'll be running the 10K and half marathon.
How exciting.
That should
first.
Be fun.
That's this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
His first half
marathon. So
dang. Good luck, Curtis. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, enjoy it.
Yeah, so he's been training for months far away in his home in cold and snowy Utah. So Disneyland's going to feel great to run in, is my
you
guess.
Go, Curtis.
So we got four questions themed around the running races. So we'll start with our first one. In the late 2000s, 2008, Danskin, not Run Disney, held a special race at Disneyland. What made this race unique? And bonus, if you can, why will it likely never happen again?
What year did you say?
2008. Maybe 2009. I'm pretty sure it was 2008.
I would say what was probably unique about it was that it went through a backstage area would be my guess. Like, that's maybe an option. But it can't anymore because of Galaxy's Edge and everything. That would be
that's
my guess.
That's a good thought.
By the way, Run Disney this weekend. For runners, I think the weather looks like it's going to be pretty nice. It's going to be highs in the low 60s. So that's good running weather,
well,
isn't it?
Great
yeah,
weather.
But they're going to be running in the morning, so you got to look
48.
Yep, so you got to look at the lows, too. Yeah. That might be when they're
gee,
outside.
A whole, like, 13-degree swing.
But, you know,
it's a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
The desert gets colder at night.
Sure.
Okay, so I think you're in the right vein. My original thought was, with it being Danskin, that's typically, I think they focus on activewear for females. So I was thinking that it was, like, a women's only run or race, but I feel like they've kind of gotten away from them. That doesn't mean they couldn't do it again. So that's, I'm going to go with what Tag said. The course can't happen again because of growth, we'll call it.
Growth. Very good. All right, moving on. Question number two. Only once has Disneyland hosted a full marathon.
Mm-hmm.
When? What year?
If, you know, we need Vern.
Yeah, this is a problem because, like,
yeah, these are totally questions for Vern or Vern.
Now, the question, James, is can you give us, like, a hint? Was it this century or last century?
Last century.
Okay. I'm going to say, like,
I'm sorry. Can we pause? That sounds crazy to say. Which century? This century? Isn't that just weird?
We're almost a quarter away through this one already.
Do you want to feel old, Teresa?
It's just so crazy.
I had a student today that told me they were born in 2004. Yeah. And I said, I remember 2004. And this person is a grown adult now.
Yeah, no, that's true. Okay, so.
I'm going to say 1998.
98?
My first inclination was 97, but I feel like I always pick 97, so I'm going to pick 98.
I'm going to say 95.
All right, 98 and 95.
It's probably 96.
Well, you know, if you're that close, I feel like there's points coming your way.
Or it's something ridiculous, like it's like 1987 or something.
Put it this way, I feel like it's recent enough that I actually thought it was more recent than.
That's why I asked what century it was.
Century. I thought it was. Yeah. Okay. Anyways, go on.
Yeah, I thought you were going to ask, like, were we alive during this one or something?
No, but I really thought it was more recent. So thanks for the hint, James.
Yeah, of course. All right. The third question. From 1957 to 1964, a unique race was held in Disneyland.
Wow.
What made this unusual?
57 to 64.
Yes.
And it was
a unique race.
Was it
running or just a race of any kind?
I mean, they ran.
Okay.
But there's something to it.
Was it a triathlon? Like, did people, like, swim in the rivers of America
and
run around the park and then, like, I don't know, bike around the parking lot or something? I don't know. I'm just going to go with the triathlon and they swam in the rivers of America.
It has to be like a cast member.
It would have
triathlon.
To be. I don't think that's right, but that's the only thing I can think of.
You know, it feels like a good guess.
That's
you got
good
logic behind it.
If it wasn't, it should
Or a biathlon.
Been.
Is it a biathlon where they do two things?
Yeah. See, I was wondering if it was like some sort of race of like they took like Autopia cars and raced them around the park.
You could.
Wait, come
well,
on, how fun.
We know that they do the like rubber ducky race at it's a small
the
world.
The duck race. Mm-hmm. The canoe race. There's all sorts of fun races happening, but
so what are you picking? I was like, you're stalling, Teresa.
I am stalling because I was thinking it was the Autopia cars, but it's not.
But it's not.
He said it's running. There's running involved.
Oh, okay.
There's running involved, yes.
Unless someone's chasing the Autopia.
Yeah, it's called
cart.
Bob Gurr is chasing the Autopia cart.
The running of the Autopia.
There you go. They have one Bob Gurr in an Autopia cart trying to run people over.
Oh. Dang. Did they do something ridiculous like run around with, like, okay, 57. No, maybe that's not right. Maybe the typing's not right. I was going to say, like, the mules, like the pack mules.
I don't
run
know.
With the, you know, like how you run with the mules, they run with the pack mules. I have nothing. I'm not even going to try and...
Stumped?
All right, we'll just put you as stumped.
Wow.
Some sort of cast member.
That's usually
that's
me.
All I got.
All right, the last question from Curtis. We all know that Walt Disney World and Disneyland have races, but based on Curtis's research, what other parks have held running events and not just run Disney specifically?
Well, I think like Paris seems like it'd be kind of a shoe-in for that type of stuff.
Yeah. The cruise lines have the unofficial 5K on Castaway K.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to say the cruise line.
Remind me, is it Castaway Key?
Oh, I don't know.
Castaway Key.
Key.
Okay, Castaway Key. C-A-Y is pronounced key.
Which is funny because it says it looks like it's K.
Yeah. Castaway Key.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there's a 5K.
But are you saying
for
parks?
Castaway.
I did say parks, but, but good knowledge drop on that one, Teresa.
Yeah, so absolutely. I'm going to say Paris. It has to be Paris. Like resort, you're saying.
Yeah, like yeah. I don't need specifically.
I assume Tokyo would have something because they've been around for a long time. I don't think Shanghai, although Shanghai might have.
I don't know.
Hong Kong, but Hong Kong might have.
I don't know. Paris feels right. In fact, I feel like I've seen
the Tour de France, which is a bike thing.
I feel like I've seen photos of people running through Paris, like like promo photos of people running through Paris. So I'm just going to say Paris because the other ones are kind of a toss up for me because I really don't know. We're going to learn so much from
Paris
trivia
and
this
Tokyo.
Week.
Paris and Tokyo are my guesses. Now watch. It's going to be Hong Kong and Shanghai, but not Paris or Tokyo.
And you've just put this idea in your head that we run in France.
Yeah, apparently.
Yes. So, yeah. I thought these were interesting. I'm glad you found these questions super interesting as well. Listeners at home, maybe you did too, or maybe you knew all of these, but we won't know for sure until after our discussion topic this week.
Well, this week for our discussion topic, we are speaking with author and international bestseller, Alexandra Monier. Welcome to DL Weekly.
Thank you so much for having me. This is so much fun. I know I already told you guys before, but I'm such a big fan and listener of your show, so very excited.
I just love this.
We're like excited to talk to you about your new book that came out, and you're excited because you're in a you're a weekly tier and you listen. So I think it's just small world. How cool! Well, let's kind of get into it.
Wait. I want to let our listeners know because I feel like you've gone through a little bit of effort here that I don't want to have go unnoticed on the audio podcast. But we are recording over Zoom, and she is wearing ears and a lovely Disney shirt. So she is definitely in theme for our interview tonight. In fact, she is dressed like Teresa normally dresses for things. So it's almost like...
I realize my shirt is actually a Disney World shirt, but
hey,
it's the
that's
same.
Okay.
Sentiment.
You know, you didn't have to fess up to that on the podcast. Nobody would know.
The fantasy land theming still holds up in either.
There you go. Exactly. Well, let's talk about it. Since yes, you are an author, you did just write an amazing Disney book, but you're also a big Disney fan yourself. So tell us about your Disney story.
Oh my gosh. Well, I feel like I just was born loving Disney. One of my earliest memories in life is I must have been like two, and I was seeing Snow White on Ice when I was a little kid, and I apparently became just obsessed. Like I would read the program as if it was like a like big book that it was my favorite book. I would just read it all the time, obsessed with playing with the dolls, and my parents, my mom even made me, she like knitted me the Snow White costume when I was little, and I would not take the thing off. I just became obsessed. And then that just grew into just a childhood love of all things Disney. When Aladdin came out, that really took it to the next level because my family is Iranian and we never, ever had any kind of representation at all in the media of just anything remotely Middle Eastern. And so to be a little girl and like see, you know, on the screen, on the big screen, these characters that, of course, you know, it was a cartoon and there were certain things that were exaggerated, but it was so representative mm-hmm. in a lot of ways, like a celebration of our part of the world and the music and the culture and mythology. And so that just made me even more diehard about my fandom for Disney and also Jasmine in particular. And then as I got older, I think maybe my love of history sort of combined with my love of Disney just made me obsessed with the parks. And especially living in LA, I moved to LA when I was about 18. So I just started like obsessively like learning all about, you know, Walt history and Disneyland history. And that just gave me such a new level of appreciation for the parks where it just became like, oh my God, how did I not know like all this incredible rich history behind this magical place? And so from there, it was just like, that has been my thing. Like everyone that meets me knows I am a Disney person. Anyone that comes to LA or goes to Disneyland for the first time, I'm the tour guide. And meanwhile, while all this was going on, I was developing my writing career. And around the time, it was shortly after my fifth book, The Final Six, came out. And that book is a sci-fi novel. I think it was just the one I was just telling you guys about earlier. Yeah. And that was actually my first book that featured a character that represented my own ethnicity. I don't know why. I think I was just kind of, I don't know, nervous to like write something so personal or a character that mm-hmm. so represented me. But I wrote an Iranian American girl as the lead. And that actually ended up being my most popular book so far around the world. And so I came to Disney's attention through that book. And I'll never forget getting this email from my agent. And he was just like, oh, I just got this email from Disney. They said they're looking for a Middle Eastern author to write the Princess Jasmine novel. And are you interested? And I just completely flipped out. I was like, oh my God, I can die and go to heaven now. Like, this is amazing. So that's my Disney story in a nutshell.
Wow. I mean, that's so cool that you have this personal connection with mm-hmm. just from the fact that you were growing up, you liked Aladdin mm-hmm. and then now you get to write about Jasmine. Yeah. So it's just kind of like a cool full circle. Like how did you know Disney?
Yeah.
You
know? This is perfect.
Yeah. I know. It's more like how are you obsessed with Disney? Because it's very much obsessed.
I just think of things like if you could go back in time and tell that little girl version of you where you are today, like, come on, how cool.
I think about that a lot, actually, because it's just, you know, not in the sense of like, oh, like, look how fabulous I am. Not like that, but more just the specific things that I get to do that are so mm-hmm. like tied in with such specific like loves of, you know, of mine, like just this whole Disney, and just especially for it to be Jasmine, like my brother and I, like we could quote that movie front to back. And when the show premiered on Broadway, that was like our thing. We went like opening month together. And so it's it was one of those things that you could just, who would have thought I would then get to write her story in a book? It's just wild.
That's incredible.
Yeah. What an awesome story. And I'm so glad that you got to experience and do this. And
I'm so glad we get to talk about it more once we get through these other
questions. That's true. That's
true. Now we have to wait.
That's true.
But I'm so excited to talk to you about Disney park stuff too. And I was thinking, you have to let me know next time you're at Disneyland, we can do it. Like a meetup.
There we go. Yeah. There we go. Well, we are trying to get our 2024 calendar lined up. So we'll let you know once we figure that out.
Please do.
Yeah.
So speaking of the parks, when you go to Disneyland on the first day of a visit, which way do you go? Do you go left towards Adventureland, through the Castle of Fantasyland, right to Tomorrowland? What's your kind of attack plan? And we should update this question. Which side of the, which tunnel do you go through to get into Disneyland? That's been
another
thing.
Okay, I always go through the, you know what? I was going to say the left-hand tunnel, but I'm realizing sometimes I go through the right. But I feel like I usually go through the left-hand tunnel. Or maybe no, you know what? It might be that I enter through the right and I exit through the left.
Gotcha.
Yep. So you enter towards the Opera House.
Yes, I enter towards the Opera House, but then I always come home because I like to look, when I leave, I like to look up at the Walt window.
There you go. Yep.
So yeah, I should usually do that. And then as far as how I enter, I always usually do the Adventureland side.
I feel like that's pretty popular.
I don't know why. The right. I feel like that's just, yeah, I never even think to do the Tomorrowland side for some reason. I feel like I usually work my way around there.
We're the same way. I get it. There's something about Adventureland. It just pulls you in the morning.
That's what you both do, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I feel like because there's so many good things over there.
Yeah.
But Fantasyland makes more sense because there's no Genie Plus, so I should be going there first. I don't know why I don't.
Right, right. Nope, I get you.
I think it's hard because I feel like families, like stereotypically, families go to, Fantasyland first.
Yeah.
The diehard, like Star Wars fans, like beeline to Galaxy's Edge and everything. And then you've got people like James, who likes Space Mountain, so he would go right towards Tomorrowland. But I feel like all of my, our favorite stuff is all on that side. Mm-hmm. Jungle Cruise, Pirates, Indiana Jones, Haunted Mansion. Like, it's just a solid group of attractions over there.
Yeah, and maybe it's just there's something about just, I think, honestly, it's probably more even just about the ease of getting into that land. Mm. It just feels less crowded and, like, when you're trying to get in there, whereas going through the castle, there's always the people taking the pictures and stuff. So.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and, like, with getting into Fantasyland, you get into Fantasy, you almost have to backtrack a little bit because you have to go past, like, where everyone's queued up to then be able to enter the queue. So the flow seems a little off if you're entering from the castle. It feels better if you're entering from the backside of Fantasyland, if that makes sense.
Oh, sure, yeah.
But, yeah.
But it is so nice to walk through the castle, too. Mm-hmm. I need to... Actually, this is inspiring me. My next time, I'm going to walk through the castle.
There you go. There you go.
With your ears, go through the castle.
Oh, yeah.
Ears off, oh, my God. Of course.
Yeah. I'll have to get some new 2024 ears.
There you go. Well, speaking of attractions, what is your favorite attraction? And of course, I mean, yes, it's a Disneyland podcast, but you are open to choosing any attraction in any of the parks.
Okay, this is so hard because there's so many. Do, like, fireworks and Fantasmic count?
Of course, why not?
Okay. So that would have to be my number one favorite because there's just nothing like those fireworks shows and Fantasmic. I feel like, yeah, that's the winner. But I also love, God, there's so many I love. Right now I really like Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway. Mm. I love that. I'm actually, the one thing I don't do at Disneyland is I have this, like, weird fear of drops. Like, even the Pirates of the Caribbean drop is too much for me. I know that sounds ridiculous, but the one thing that I can do that I don't get, like, that feeling with your stomach, where your stomach just feels like it's going to fall out, where everyone loves that feeling makes me feel like I'm going to die for some reason. So
sure,
I can't do any roller coasters, which is a bummer, but I love all the virtual reality stuff. So Millennium Falcon, it's the weirdest thing. Like, I don't have that same drop issue on so I do love Millennium Falcon and Star Tours and Soarin'. I know those are kind of, Soarin' and Star Tours are, like, real vintage at this point, but I always get excited to do those. And then at Disney World, I have a soft spot for Spaceship Earth, the time travel.
Yes, that is a classic. I feel like Spaceship Earth for Walt Disney World is like the tiki room for Disneyland. If you got, maybe not everybody understands why it's special, but it's special and you just can't ever get rid of it. It just always has to be there.
Well, and what was crazy the last time I was in Epcot is it's right at the front of the park.
Yeah.
And there's a whole chunks of the day there's, like, no line for it. And I'm like, what is wrong with you people?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's so good. And it's nice and it's, like, long. And then they have that fun thing at the end where you see yourself in the future. And I love that one.
Yeah,
it's good. I also really love Haunted Mansion Holiday. That one is so great. I mean, both Haunted Mansions, but the Haunted Mansion Holiday is so amazing. It's just cool. Yeah, so many that I love.
I have a new goal in life that I didn't even realize was a goal. But there's another haunt. I didn't realize this. There's Haunted Mansion Holiday, of course, in Disneyland. But there's Haunted Mansion Holiday also. I think it's in Japan.
Tokyo?
Yeah, I think it's in Tokyo. And I didn't know that. And so I just saw a video with that and I'm like, oh, this is like a new, I mean, I wanted to visit all the parks anyways, but now I feel like I have to visit this park for the Halloween season as well as just the regular season. But I'm pretty sure it's at Tokyo Disneyland.
That is so cool. It makes me even more curious now why they don't have Haunted Mansion Holiday at Disney World. If it's not a Disneyland experience.
I had somebody explain this once, and it kind of makes sense in a way. So Disney World compared to Disneyland, Disney World is basically like a once-in-a-lifetime vacation for many people. Like, they will only go once. Like, they save up. It's a huge, you know, there's four parks, and a lot of people stay on property. You know, it's a whole thing, right? Yeah. And so I think what happens is, what was explained to me is, if you're only ever going to go once, and it's not the normal version – people will be disappointed or upset because they're like, well, I'm only ever going once and I want to see the original version of something, which I feel like, okay, sure. But they have the Jingle Cruise. So it's like,
I don't know, why don't we have the Jingle Cruise?
We had it and it went away. I don't know why.
It needs to come back.
Yeah.
Yeah. I never got that one. Hmm. Yeah. I always wondered about that and about why they don't get the awesome Mary Blair style characters in their Small World either.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I feel a little sad for Walt Disney World Small World because the outside versus the outside, you know, the exterior of that attraction versus the exterior of ours, it just makes me sad. I'm like, oh, but it's so beautiful at Disneyland. It's like its own little icon. Whereas if you didn't know where it was at Disney World, you could walk right past and not even know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, anyways, you know what? When we were talking and we said the attraction thing, it dawned on me. I'm like, there's not a proper Aladdin attraction.
There's
the magic carpets that have the little spinning camel things in Walt Disney World, but I'm not going to count that.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a proper.
I do like that one. Maybe I just like it because I should have mentioned that earlier. I mean, it's not one of my favorites because it's basically Dumbo with carpets, but yeah. I do really like it just because it has some Aladdin vibe.
Yeah,
it does have a spinning camel next to it, which is pretty fun.
Yeah, it has the spinning camels, but come on. Aladdin would be.
They should have I feel like they could do like a Peter Pan style with flying on the carpets, or even like, I don't know, maybe it would be too similar to Soarin' if they did a virtual reality, but it would just be so cool. Like magic carpet, right?
Or hear me out. You know what I'm going to say. They should just bring back Aladdin, the Musical Spectacular in Disney California Adventure because that was like the best show I've ever seen.
It was
amazing. I would watch that 100 times.
Oh, I will also give some credit. We do have Agrabah in Storybook Land Canal Boat. So there's a little bit of.
But that's not
a little, a little.
No, that Aladdin show was so good. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. I feel like it was awesome. And they would update it all the time, too. I feel like the comedy, like you could see that every trip and you'd get new comedy. They have to bring that back. We need to start a petition.
I think it would be popular.
I'm just curious in general what they're going to do with the theater because. I mean, they need a show, and they haven't announced what the new show is going to be. But maybe. Tag's trying to look it up because we did have
Dylan,
who was the genie for the Aladdin show at the Hyperion. We had him on
a long time ago.
Like I feel like he was one of our first guests.
Yeah, I was going to say, I didn't hear that one. That must be before I found your show.
Episode 237, we brought his interview out of the vault. Mm-hmm. That was from like June of 2022.
Okay.
Is when we replayed it because he was great. He was one of the first guests that we had on that like had worked at the park or something like that.
Did he happen to know if it's going to come back?
He didn't. No, he didn't.
But He's doing comedy now.
He was originally on episode 76. I feel like he was one of our first big interviews.
Yeah.
Like we were pretty like.
I couldn't believe we found him, I think, on Instagram or something and like sent him a message.
No, a weekly tier?
Or
a
weekly
tier. Yep, tier connected.
But it was so cool because I was like, oh my gosh, it's the genie. And then he told us all these fun stories. You should definitely go listen to it. It's amazing.
I will.
He talked about some of the cast members too. Like there was that one cast member who was like, they were really inclusive. She was in the wheelchair and was like in the show and stuff. And he talked about her and like, I don't know. It was really great.
Yeah, and just his experience overall. It was amazing. Well, back
to the book.
Back to the book. We were very fortunate and you were very kind, Alexandra, to send us each a copy. I just got it this week and I already, as I was telling you before we started, sat down and like, went through the first like 4 or 5 chapters right away. And I can't wait to like sit down and read more. It's very, very fun. So the book is called Realm of Wonders. And from what we're not going to give the whole thing away because it looks so interesting because yes, it's Princess Jasmine. Yes, Aladdin is present, but it's not the typical story. So can you kind of tell us what it was like to kind of come up with a new story for such a beloved classic character?
Yeah. So basically, Realm of Wonders is part of a 4-book series that Disney is doing called The Queen's Council. And each book, they basically picked a different author to tell a different princess story after the events of the movie, once the princess is basically coming into power or taking on the role of queen or empress in some form. And so the first book was Rebel Rose, which was set in the French Revolution, and it follows Belle. That one's written by Emma Terrio, and it's fabulous. And then the second book is Feather and Flame, which follows Mulan, and that book is awesome too. And then I'm writing Jasmine, and then the fourth one that comes out next year is Aurora. So basically it was presented to me that these books are young adult novels, so they are geared towards teens and in the teen section of the bookstore, and the characters are, you know, in their late teens, but they cover themes like that are a little bit older, like coming into power and love and marriage and things like that, but with a Disney twist. So I was really excited, and I was given a lot of freedom as far as what kind of story I would want to tell for Jasmine. And it was sort of like I was told to audition, essentially. Like, they approached me, but they wanted me to audition and write essentially a first chapter. And I knew that other authors would be doing the same that they had reached out to. So it was like nerve-wracking because I wanted it so much, but I had no idea, like, are they going to pick me? And so the first thing that entered my mind was, I was like, I don't know why, but I'm picturing like a slight like horror twist with this. Like, I was thinking about how would Jasmine, you know, realistically come into power young? Well, obviously her dad would have to die. The Sultan would have to die. Yeah. And, you know, because it's me writing it, and I always have to have like a heightened kind of situation, like everything has to be dramatic. I was like, I want him to die under mysterious circumstances. And so we literally open the book with like his body on a metal slab, and Jasmine's looking at it, and you know, then something kind of supernatural happens, and something spooky happens. And I just sort of took off running from there, and I wrote that opening chapter. And I sent it in. I was like, I have no idea if they're going to like this direction. It also, my story also kind of got into a lot of what it's like when you are a young woman who is next in line for the throne, but you're in a kind of patriarchal kingdom regime, which Agrabah is fictional, but it's based on places like where my family came from, Iran, which are the, you know, very patriarchal regimes where women do not have the same rights as men. And so I really wanted to focus on that as well. Sorry to go off on a tangent, but
no, that was perfect.
I think I just really made that opening chapter my own with both the really spooky opening where Jasmine realizes this wasn't like an ordinary natural causes kind of a death. And then also when she is introduced to her people for the first time and they're announcing her as Sultana Jasmine, and you see like that there are very few people that believe in her and support her as being the first female ruler, the first Sultana. And so that leads into the arrival of this mysterious cousin who basically makes a claim for the throne and sets up this kind of Disney Game of Thrones dynamic that I wrote. So that was essentially what I pitched Disney. And then I waited a few weeks really nervously and was so happy when they chose my take on it. And because of that, they just, you know, they gave me freedom to kind of go with this vision.
Longest few weeks of your life, I'm sure. Oh my God, waiting to hear back.
Crazy. Thankfully, I was on deadline for another book, so I had to be like, it forced me to be busy, but not just thinking about it. But I mean, every time my email, I was like constantly checking my email and refreshing.
I don't blame you. Well, I mean, again, I am just a couple of chapters in, but that's, I think, it's not your classic Disney fairy tale opening. And I think that's why I'm so like, what is like, I just need to know what's happening, because there's so many like different turns and all this stuff. And I'm like,
and like, I'll be honest with you. So we sat down and I had shared with you earlier, but to let the listeners know, I haven't had a chance to read it yet, but I sat down before you hopped on the call and I said, did you get a chance to read it at all? And Teresa said, yeah, I got a few chapters in. And I said, what do you think? She's like, it's really good. And I was like, well, that's good. That's good. Because, you know, you never know what a book is going to be like. And I want to just share, like I said, I haven't read it, but I want to go back to what you said at the beginning, because I do think it's important to tell people who might think, oh, young adult novel, whatever. No, I love young adult novels because, believe it or not, they cover a lot of like really good topics and situations and stuff. And people think like, oh, young adults, like a kid's book or something. But no, it kind of bridges that gap, but doesn't get like too dark. Although it sounds like this one could be fairly dark. But I just want to implore people, like, don't discount any young adult book thinking it's something that's, you know, childish or something like that. Because I love young adult is probably my favorite like age range of book.
Oh my God. I love you for saying that. Thank you so much, because it's so true. It's such a misconception. I mean, it really is. And the truth is that ever since my first book, I've gotten probably as many fan messages from adults well into their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s and onward as I do from 14, 15, 16 year olds. It's pretty close to equal. And I think the reason people of all ages love young adult is because we really touch on a lot of the themes that are just so universal and things that we can all relate to, whether that's first love or first big experience of heartbreak or grief or any kind of like big change in life. I feel like that's what young adult does so well. But also, young adult novels are really marked by pacing. So our books move quickly.
Yeah.
And so that's something I love when I read young adult, is that I'm not skimming through, you know, pages of exposition or description. It's like there's stuff happening all the time. And so that's why I love it too. And I really think they're really, the age category thing is, it's really just being like, hey, you know, if you have a teenager, they can read this, they will like this. But it doesn't mean that the parents won't also like it, or, you know, anyone of any age.
I mean, it's like Disney, right? What is a lot of Disney things? It's geared towards children, but here we are as full grown adults.
Wanted stuff for everybody,
big old
right?
Fans. You know, it's geared towards children, but there's something in it for everyone. Mm-hmm. So
I also feel like it's interesting. I feel like in this book, I was able to kind of tap into things that maybe feel a little bit heavy in kind of a safe way. Like, you know, there's a lot of like trauma in my family background, just having to escape from Iran and just all the things that were taken away from the women in my family who have been very prominent and successful. And then suddenly this new regime comes in and takes it all. And so I have a lot of feelings about that and things that I like wrestle with. And so I feel like in a way this book allowed me, through magic and Agrabah and all of that, it allowed me to kind of delve into some of those themes that I think are probably relatable for anyone that's, you know, ever experienced any kind of marginalization. But so, yeah, it's a fairy tale book. It is like a fun, enchanting, like magic carpet ride, but it also has those things that make it really personal to me and that I think give it like an emotional heft also.
Now, I have to ask a question, because two questions, but they're related. And I don't want you to give any of the book away.
Okay.
But I see in the cover that she's got like the genie's lamp. So like, is the genie around at some point? And also, where's Aladdin? I'm reading the description. I don't see any Aladdin.
I think you need to read the book, Tag.
I do need to read the book. But I'm just curious.
I'm glad you brought up Aladdin, because I did get to write more of the Aladdin Jasmine love story. He is definitely a big part of the book. But it's fun because this time, you know, whereas she was the romantic lead in his movie, and this time it's like her story, and he's basically the love interest of her story, which is really fun. I definitely throw a couple of roadblocks at their romance in the book. But if you're very invested in the Aladdin Jasmine love story, I'll just say you don't have to be too worried.
That's good.
I love them too. And I did try and write as much like romance as I could get away with this one. Like, Teresa, I don't know. Have you reached the chapter with them talking outside the closed
not
door?
Yet. Nope, not yet.
Okay. Well, I just gave away. It's not spoilery, but
no, nope, that's fine.
That was one I had a lot of fun with.
Well, now I'm excited to get there.
There are Aladdin Jasmine kissing scenes, and they were really fun to write.
That's awesome. The thing I've enjoyed, and I mean, I was already excited, as you all have heard me talk, but how you were saying that, you know, that you kind of touched on more difficult and not, you know, sunshine and roses type topics in here. And I'm just thinking, what a perfect character, because Jasmine is just, she's maybe not in the movie always very sure of herself, but
she's a strong, independent woman.
She's a strong, independent woman. And there's already been a couple of instances that people have kind of questioned, like, are you sure? Are you sure you want to do this? You know, they're kind of belittling her in a way. And she just snaps back right at him and just goes, I got this. So I'm like, ooh, that's only like the tip of the iceberg.
Well, you saw that in the original movie too. Like some of the ways that Jafar treated her, like, you know, I just remember like him eating the apple and like spitting it kind of like at her and stuff. Like, she has no value. Like she's just a means to an end for him or whatever. And
well, and that's honestly one of the things that I always just loved about her so much too, is that out of all the princesses, and I love them all, but she was like the strongest and the fiercest, you know, at least to me growing up with the princesses that we had available to us. It was especially meaningful because so often, again, like when you look at like the stereotypical like Middle Eastern woman representation, it's very like meek and oppressed and stuff like that. And so I just think it's so cool that Disney really just went from the beginning, even in the 90s, that they like rejected kind of the stereotypes and they wrote Jasmine as such a just a badass, like fierce.
Well, even that scene where she,
I mean, she has a tiger for God's
sake. That's true.
I know. I mean, oh, yeah, what Raja, an awesome.
Raja is a big part of the book too.
I love good.
Yeah.
Because but even in the movie where like she kind of uses that and is like, oh, like you're here, and then she's like, I don't need you. Like, what are you doing here?
Well, I mean, and she's, I felt like all the princesses up until Jasmine kind of waited for a rescue. Whereas in the first part of the movie, Jasmine's the one escaping the palace and like going
and
out on her own.
She's the one who doesn't want a prince. Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, and she's rejecting all the princes. Yep. She's
the best princess. I'm declaring it here.
She is. She's amazing.
And I'm glad that her father came around and was like, we can change the rules. I'm the, you know.
You know what? I'm the sultan. Yeah, we can do that.
I know,
always think that's funny. It's like, you can make the, you make the rules. Just change the rule. There you go. Not a problem anymore.
It's never that easy to.
This is the last thing I'll say, then we can get back on track. But I saw a thing this week. It was like a meme or something. And it said, like, because we were talking about like traditions and being able to change rules and stuff. And it said, tradition is peer pressure. Pressure from dead people.
Oh, that's good.
That's
funny.
And I was like, that's so true, because it's like we've always done it this way. It's tradition. It's like, but that's because these people who aren't even around anymore started doing, in some cases, have started doing this. And like, why are we still holding to these things? Anyway, peer pressure.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Nope, that's an interesting way to look at it. So I kind of want a little bit of a spin. We already talked about this, but there are no good, true, we're going to call it, well, they're good. There are no true Aladdin attractions in any of the Disney parks. So if you could be an Imagineer for however long it takes. Yeah. I was going to say a day, but it does not, you do not build an attraction in a day. If you could be an Imagineer, or if you could work with the Imagineers to create.
If she could rub the magic lamp
there
and make
a
Aladdin,
if you could use
attraction.
One of your three wishes, what do you think an Aladdin attraction should look like? We talked about the magic carpets.
Yeah. So I think definitely I would love something, I think like a cool, maybe like a mix between like a Peter Pan's Flight and Soarin', where I don't know how you would combine that, but just the idea of like a magic carpet, like we each ride a magic carpet and you're like flying and you get to do the Aladdin and Jasmine whole new world, but you get to actually fly it. Like that feels like such a no-brainer.
I feel like you could, because look at like Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway. You've got the ride vehicle, but then you go into like the little screened areas. So why not?
Maybe they could do the Mickey and Minnie, that sort of technology, but just have you flying instead of in a car.
Well, I was just thinking that, you could do a trackless vehicle that you get on a carpet, and it could be almost like Midway Mania, because like the ride vehicle, when you get on, like kind of goes under the platform. So like you could just get on the carpet and like clip in or whatever. And then like it could go, it could almost be like Indy, where it could go up and down a little bit.
There you go.
And then it's on a trackless thing, so it can move through stuff. Yeah. I don't know. It could be cool. Come on, Imagineers.
I know. But then because of my fear of drops, I feel like we're going to have to make it like Mickey Minnie, where there's the screens. So you're not actually.
It's on a carpet. It's gonna just glide.
Yeah, it's gonna glide. It's gonna float a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
Nothing crazy. It's not like you're trying to escape the Cave of Wonders and then you fall or anything.
See, that would be such a good scene. That really would be
Could perfect ride. Go through the Cave of Wonders. How cool would that be?
Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe, there's so many
ride
options.
The ride could start in the Cave of Wonders, and then you go through all that and see all the jewels and the gold and the treasures, and then you come out, and then you go through all of, like, the Middle East. That would be so fun.
Yeah. And then you offload on the balcony of Princess Jasmine's.
Oh, yeah.
That'd be cool.
And then Raja can be there to greet you.
Yeah. There you go. There you go.
I think this would be like the new e-ticket attraction.
There you go.
I like it.
You could have it for free, Disney. Just build it.
And invite us to come
and invite us.
And test it.
Yeah, let us test it too.
I love it.
I mean, you've got Disney connections. I mean, you just got to talk to the right people, you know?
I know. I'm just thinking. Maybe I'll ask my editor. Who do we know in Imagineering?
Yeah, yeah. It's like the 6-degree rule, right? There's got to be a connection there. So with the book, so is this... Again, we don't want to give anything away, but does this wrap up the end of Jasmine's story, or does this kind of leave it open that perhaps maybe there's more?
Ooh, that's a really good question. So I definitely wrapped up her story, like this chapter of her life.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
But I mean, if Disney wants me to write, you know, Jasmine a few years after that, I would definitely say yes, because it's so much fun. But yeah, I mean, each one is, in the series, is a standalone. Mm. So, you know, we give you the full kind of give you like the ending, but it's the kind of thing where it could always continue on. So
awesome.
You never know.
Yeah. Awesome.
So out of curiosity, since this is part of like a series, do any of the, like, how do the books relate to, other than being Disney and being princesses, like, how do they connect at all?
Yes. Oh my God. I'm so glad you asked that, because I totally meant to mention that. So the series is called The Queen's Council, and that's because in each book, there's this being, and they take on a different form in each book, like either a different person or a different, like, magical being that connects with the particular princess.
Oh.
And so that Queen's Council is almost like an oracle type figure, a guiding figure that basically comes into the story and helps them in their time of need. So each book has a different figure like that, or more than one figure. So that is the through line in the series. And there are little bits of nods here and there to the others princesses in the books, but it's very, like, they're very much in their own kind of universe. But that's really the main through line.
That sounds cool. I like this concept, because it seems like it's kind of, you know, it's unique, because it's not like a sequel, right? Like, you've exactly. got, so I like that, because mm-hmm. sometimes sequel, it's like, okay, we're kind of rehashing some things, well, but and, this and sounds not totally even that. Awesome.
You could pick up any of the, what will be four books, and it doesn't matter if you read, like, you don't have to read them in a particular exactly. order, it doesn't sound like. Yeah. So you can.
They can be read in any order, which mm-hmm. I love that about a series, too. It's similar to the Disney Twisted Tale series.
Oh, yep. mm-hmm.
And read them in any order. The other thing, too, that is just, is cool about them is that each book, like, it has that kind of mix of supernatural but also historical fiction to it, because they chose princesses that are each, like, rooted in a specific country and time and place, which makes it really fun.
I mean, I was excited about this book because I started it, but now I'm like, I've got to pick up the other ones now too and check those
They're
out.
All so good. Yeah.
I also want to say subjectively here, I think you have the best cover of the three.
Thank you.
I mean, a couple. One,
I have nothing to do with the cover. I have nothing to do with it.
One, it's purple, which is my favorite color.
Purple, but, like, and gold. Yeah.
Yeah. The other ones just have symbols of their character.
That's
more
there's
than
different.
The,
hang on. There's different arts. You're seeing.
Oh, is there?
Yep,
I'm only
there's
seeing
different
the one art.
Arts. You're only seeing. Yep.
I'm seeing the Amazon art.
I think that's the right art, isn't it?
Well, so this one's got, like, Rebel Rose just has a rose, like a golden rose. And then Feather and Flame has, like, the sword with...
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so, it doesn't have the princesses on.
All right, so that's because... Actually, Tag, you might change your mind now that you're listening.
Uh-oh. Uh-oh.
But it's okay. I love all the covers, and we're all sisters, me and the other princesses. So basically, they repackaged. So when mine came out, they did a cover redesign. So basically, they redesigned the paperbacks of the first two books to match my book's cover. So this is
your... So you were the first one that had...
Oh.
Rose.
That's
and then
gorgeous.
I still think yours is the best looking cover, even though I've seen the other ones.
Well, I think it's because I love the... I think the magic lamp adds...
Yeah.
And just the fact that, you know, she's got this fabulous like gold jewelry and mm-hmm. purple and the gold and the turquoise. I mean, I love all the covers, but obviously I'm partial.
Right. Well, good. I don't feel as well. But still, like, I now I'm excited to read it because Teresa's going to want to talk about it probably too. But I'm actually intrigued by the storyline because it sounds like really captivating and interesting. And like I said, it's a young adult novel, so I think it's going to be a lot. Like you said, sometimes with books, like, you can hit like lulls and stuff, but you got to kind of keep it moving mm-hmm. in a young adult format.
Well, I was going to say, and like Alexander already said, the first chapter is like,
well, yeah,
just kind of
sucks you in.
I was going to say, no pun intended, the rug's just like ripped right out from under you, and you're like, what?
So, perfect yeah. pun. I love it. Yeah. And the other thing, too, I forgot to mention also is that I really was able to, I asked Disney if it was cool for me to like weave in a lot of that sort of Persian mythology that I grew up with and the actual origins, the Thousand and One Nights that the Aladdin story comes from. So there's a lot of that in the book as well, which I
cool.
think is really, really special for me to write, but also added in that other like mythology layer as well.
Oh, that's cool. That's very cool.
After this interview, I know Teresa's going to go read like another couple chapters.
That's what I'm doing after this interview. I'm going to read a couple more chapters before bed and force myself probably
I'm gonna
to.
Now I want to hear like what you think when you get to these certain parts.
I'll let you know. I do want to talk because I do think there's probably some extra magic in being a writer for Disney. So what are kind of some of the, I don't know, maybe things that are different or magical things you've got to experience because of this book?
Oh my gosh. I feel like 2023 was like, was all Disney magic just getting to promote this book.
Yeah.
The last few months of the year, because the book came out in October. So in September, truly like bucket list dream come true experience, Disney asked me to come to Orlando to speak to the Disney College program.
Oh,
nice. I was like, OMG, like this is the coolest thing ever. So of course I was like, well, you know, can I go to the parks too? And let's take photos and stuff. And so they actually got me into the parks. So a couple day park hoppers, you know, Disney did me, which was so cool. But then I added on some more myself because I was like, I got to come for a whole week, you know? And I got to bring, because it would have been too much to bring my kids because they're so little and I'd be working the whole time. So I got to bring one of my closest friends in the world who's like a fellow Disney adult like me. Like we would go to the park together all the time here in LA. We would go to Disneyland. So to be able to call her and be like, hey, do you want to come to Disney World with me? And we're going to stay at the Grand Floridian and the Boardwalk. And we're going to basically go to the parks every day and like take photos with the book. And then there's going to be one day where I have to go speak at the Disney College program and you can go to the parks by yourself. And we're going to have this. And it was just such a dream come true. Like it really, I'm going to be like thinking about that forever. It was so fun.
And that sounds amazing.
Yeah.
It was incredible. It really was. Because there are so many things in being an author. There's so many, like, there's constantly moving goalposts. And there's a lot of, like, you know, there's a lot of, like, being measured by things, like, feeling measured by things, like, sales numbers and this and that. And so there's so much of being an author where you're, like, you're just nervous a lot. Because there's so many things outside your control. So to be able to have that week where it was, like, I'm getting sent to this place that I'm obsessed with by the company that I'm obsessed with. They're sending me here. Like they're putting me like in this magical place and they want me to talk to like 150 students. And they had books printed early for the college program students. Oh, that was neat. So I got to find them. And so it was really one of those moments where I was like, I just want to hold on to this feeling forever because this mm-hmm. is like the best feeling. And then similarly, they also sent me to, New York for New York Comic Con, which happened to fall in the week my book came out. And so I got to do a Disney reimagined panel with my editor was the moderator, which was really cool. And it was me and some other authors who write for Twisted Tale. And I ended up becoming great friends with them too. It was me, a Twisted Tale authors, and also a great author who writes for Star Wars and the Disney Meant to Be series. And so that was really fun. And just a lot of experiences like that have been truly like, just seriously, like I'm just so grateful for them because it would mean a lot to me just as an author, but to be a Disney fan getting mm-hmm. to do all this, like I can't get over it. I'm still just so thankful.
Well, and that's amazing. We were talking about this before the interview. I'm like, this is just so cool because how many people are either, you know, either authors or actors or whatever. And they're like, that's the dream, right? Is to do something with Disney. So the fact that you did that and the fact that you're such a fan yourself, how you didn't explode from the excitement. I don't know.
I probably didn't sleep for like weeks. And then you'll probably appreciate this because I feel like we're similar in this way. So leading up to the trip, I had like this whole spreadsheet going of like, these are all the restaurants we're going to eat at. And then like, these are all the snacks we have to try. And then these are the different like locations where we're going to take photos of the book for social media, like for the rides we're going to do. And I sent it to my friend and I guess it was so over the top. She like forwarded it to everyone she knows. She was like, I gotta see this. But yeah, it was just so much fun. And so now I'm like, already me and the same friend, we're going to the Disney After Dark event together, Sweethearts Night. And
fun.
And yeah, I'm just constantly like, okay, I have a new idea that hopefully Disney will want to do together and that I'm starting to develop, that I'm developing a pitch for. And I'm like, okay, I'm just manifesting more things to write for Disney and more reasons to go to the parks for research and
that's
stuff
awesome.
Like
that.
There's nothing we've experienced this multiple times with the podcast and people we've had on and everything too, is there's nothing like other Disney fans. Mm-hmm. Like when people get together, they become like instant friends and like can talk forever at each other, with each other. I do want to mention, we did get a photo. Hannah sent us a photo of you and the book and Jasmine.
Yes.
That was so fun. Okay, I have to tell you a little story about that. So
please.
When I've only been to Disney World like three times in my life. Once was, or no, maybe four times actually, but two of them were like 15 plus years ago. So then in November of 2022, we went as a family because a close friend was getting married in Miami. So I was like, well, you know where it's 3 hours away from Miami?
You know, it's really close, basically neighbored.
Disney World. So somehow this like weekend in Miami turned into, and now we're going to add on like 6 days at Disney World too. And so when I had my daughter who was turning one that trip, we had her like take a photo with Jasmine. And then my husband, I was too shy to say anything. My husband said, you know, she's writing a book about you. And she was like, oh, I'm really interested in this. I'm going to be looking out for that. And then it was really cool that when we went back a year later, or when I went back a year later and I was there, you know, that Disney had brought me there and I was there with the book and we were doing photos in Morocco, which is where they have Jasmine. Mm-hmm. She saw me. And then later we went and we did the photos and she was like, oh my, it was the same person. It was the same Jasmine. And she was like, cool. I remembered you. I remember this book. And we ended up, the cast members were so nice. They just ended up, I think I was the last in line or something. So we had like all this time to ourselves to take photos and chat. And it was really cool. And it was also awesome to see that these cast members who are the characters, like they're passionate too. And they're excited as well. Like I went to the China Pavilion and I met Mulan and I showed her my friend's Mulan book and she was like, oh. And it's just like, I feel like everyone that works for Disney mm-hmm. in some way, it's like we're all like really proud and passionate about it.
Now, did you give Jasmine a copy of your book?
You know what? I should have, but the thing is, it hadn't come out yet then. So sure. I only had one, the one that I was traveling with, but I did get, it's probably my most prized possession now. I did have all the characters sign my book. It was my friend's idea. She was like, you should get everyone to sign your copy that you're traveling with. So I had like everyone from Jasmine to Mickey and everyone sign it. And then I think I even had Jafar sign it.
Wow.
We went to, we our trip work coincided with the not so scary Halloween party. So we saw him. But it was really funny because one of the characters we got to meet too was Genie. And at the party, Genie and Jasmine were together. This was separately at Magic Kingdom. And so the Jasmine there that night, she was like, oh, you know, so what, how does, like, what's the book about? And I was like, well, so your dad dies. And then And then Genie like covered his ears. I have this great video of Genie like covering his ears and like shaking his head like
no, no, no.
Jafar is off to the side like twisting his little beard or something with his staff like oh, yes nice. Yes
I know they're so great. And then in Epcot, Jasmine, I think she must have remembered me telling her the story like a year earlier, because she was like, I've been so excited about your book, you know, I haven't shared anything about it with my father, but me and Boo and Aladdin were very excited, and it was just so
oh
cute.
That's so fun. It's the cast members are the magic. I mean,
it's
they
true.
Seriously
are. Like
they truly are.
The people that you've worked with at Disney, like, are they like crazy Disney people too?
They love Disney, but I gotta tell you, I'm the most obsessed out of.
Okay. There's different levels, Tag. Not everybody's on this level.
Because we've talked to other people. We talked to somebody who works in Disney Plus doing like financial stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks about like there's a bunch of people like in his division that are like, yeah, we're good with numbers. Like, it's just, it just happens to be a Disney. Like, woo. Yeah. And I'm like, what is wrong with these people?
I think it probably depends on what part of the company
sure.
you're looking for.
But still,
yeah.
though.
Yeah.
All the creative people I've worked with, they're total mm-hmm. Disney fans. Mm-hmm. But that's I good. Think they're fans of like Disney, the characters and everything. I feel like I'm probably the most obsessed with like the park stuff.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Like, I mean, yeah, I feel like there aren't that many people that I can necessarily sit down and be like, okay, so favorite Dole Whip flavor, go.
Well, we can end the interview here and I can step away and you and Teresa can have that conversation for a very long time.
And
because
mine
she loves
still,
all the flavors.
Mine is still the original flavor. Yeah. I know people like the new
Are
spice.
You also original?
I'm also original. Mm. And I've also learned I'm not a float girl. I'm just a straight up Dole Whip girl.
Oh, yeah. The float ruins it. I mm-hmm.
It's like too pineapple-y or something. I don't know.
One of the people that
it waters it down.
Yeah. Discord chat had a Dole Whip in Hawaii.
I've done that too. Yeah they
those
have
are
it
really
in,
great.
Yeah. It's funny when you find places that sell Dole Whip. Have you gotten the like grocery store Dole Whip yet? I haven't tried that.
Have not tried that.
We have
making
a
premium bars, yes, but not the
We have a local like
It's a drive-in,
like classic old drive-in thing, and they have a Dole Whip, but it's not the same.
It's not the same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's good, but it's not the same.
It has to be the exact brand. Mm-hmm. We actually found a place when we were visiting my husband's family in New Jersey over the summer, in Montclair, New Jersey, in a suburban town. They had a frozen yogurt place, and then they had real Dole Whips there. It was wild.
Wow.
Exactly the same.
Good find. So if you're in New Jersey.
In Montclair. I wish I could remember the name of this place.
You know what's even harder to find than a good Dole Whip, though?
A good churro?
Is a good churro, because the only place that makes churros perfectly is Disneyland. Because Disney World churros are not good.
They're different.
Yeah, I don't actually like churros. Isn't that weird? I'm obsessed with sweets, but not churros. I don't know why.
That's okay. Everybody likes different things. Mm-hmm. It's fine. More churro for me.
I was going to say, there's just so many treats and so little stomach space.
Give me like the Gibson Girl ice cream or Mickey bars or Jolly Holiday baked goods over a churro any day.
Holiday baked goods. Was there anything else that you wanted to talk about that we did not talk about?
Oh, well, I did want to share that I have a little gift. Just as a thank you for any of your listeners that decide to buy a copy of Realm of Wonders, I do have a special gift. It's a signed first edition book plate. You can send me your name or whoever you want me to personalize it to. I'll personalize it and sign it for you. And then we have these three limited edition art print posters, 8x10. And the first one is my Jasmine cover and cover art, Realm of Wonders. Then there's Mulan's for Feather and Flame and Belle for Rebel Rose. And they're all really beautiful. And I would love to just send them to your listeners as a thank you for listening to this episode and buying the book. So all you have to do is just send an email to, I'll just make it easy, alexandramonierbooks@gmail.com. Just send an email there with your proof of purchase, either a screenshot of the receipt or order confirmation and where you would like your gift sent to, and I'll send it over to you. And make sure to just mention DL Weekly.
We will have that email address and instructions in our show notes, also with links to your Instagram and the place where you can get a copy of the book and your other books that you've had.
That's another question or something we should go over. Where can people get the book?
Yeah.
Yes. So the book is available pretty much everywhere books are sold.
That's awesome.
In the U.S., it's going to be at pretty much all Barnes & Noble stores, which is really fun. And you can also get it on Amazon, BNN.com, independent bookstores. It'll be in some of them. And the ones that don't have it, if they're like a local store that you love that you want to buy from, they can always order it. But as far as like instant, you can find it in store, Barnes & Noble and Amazon. Everywhere.
And is it just the physical book, or are there ebooks or audiobooks as well?
Oh, good question. Thank you for bringing that up, Teresa, because actually there is an audiobook which Disney hired me to narrate. So I got to read it, which was really fun. So if you're an audiobook listener, that's available on Audible or any of the other audiobook retailers. And then there is ebook as well.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for sprinkling some extra magic on fellow listeners like yourself. I think that's so cool that you're doing a little extra something for them to, like I said, give them a little more magic in their day. That's so cool.
Absolutely. Oh my God. It's my pleasure. And I know how much we Disney fans love like the special art and stuff. So when I got this stuff, I was like, oh my God, I want to give this away.
You're like, perfect.
I know. I want to give this to people because it's so pretty. Like, you know, I want you guys to see it.
Amazing.
All right. Well, we're going to wrap up with our final question. If you could work at Disneyland, what would you do? Sky's the limit. Can be any job. Can be a real job. Can be a made up job. What would you do?
Okay. Well, I would probably say I would love to, because I also write music. I would love to write music for like the parades or like shows.
Wow. Yeah.
So I feel like that would be my dream. Yeah.
That's the first for that one.
I'm just so impressed with you. The fact that you
are so kind.
Became a Disney, you know, like you loved this movie when you were a child, to then be an author for Jasmine as an adult. That's just incredible. And you write music on top of it. Jeez. Aww,
thank you.
You know what I think you should do? I think you should talk to Disney and see if you could be Jasmine for a day. I think that would be so magical.
Oh my gosh.
Or maybe like for an hour. Maybe it's too big of shoes to fill to do a whole day, but like,
yeah, I feel like the Jasmines are so good. Oh my gosh. That would be really fun though. I feel like some Halloween at the very least I need to.
But in a parade. So then you can.
Oh yeah, in a parade. I could do the parade.
Looks like we're coming in for a landing, gang. But please stay listening until trivia comes to a stop. The menus can walk to the nearest exit. Thanks for listening to the 8th Wonder of the World, Dia Weekly.
All right, welcome back. Hopefully you're not too tired, because we got a lot of running to do, you know?
Oh, James, always the...
So punny.
I love my bad jokes, so... But fortunately, you're probably not as tired as Curtis will be, our listener who sent us our questions this week, who's running in the races amongst probably several other listeners, I'm guessing, too. So good luck to all of y'all.
I'm very excited for Curtis and for all the other. I'm trying to think, because I know Alex in the chat is running this weekend. Gretchen from our Discord chat is also running. So look at that. The three weekly tiers that we know of off the top of our heads. That's so exciting for them.
That's awesome, though.
Yeah, I hope we get to see some pictures.
Mm-hmm.
But we're here for trivia questions. So let's see how you two did this week. So the first question was, Dan Skin held a special race in Disneyland back in the late 2000s. I think it was 2008. What made the race unique? And if you could, tell me why it'll never happen again. You are both wrong on this one. It was a triathlon.
Oh.
It swam through Paradise Bay, which is likely why it'll never happen again. Because the World of Color fountains are in the way.
Oh.
So our next question about unique race, we just had it on the wrong question.
Yep. Curtis says he also would have accepted that it was a women's only race.
Oh, no! I talked myself out of it.
You were there, Teresa.
I was there.
You were there.
Like so. I said, there was no reason that they wouldn't do that again. So that's why I'm like, that... So close.
So close, yeah.
Story of my trivia life.
Yeah, so
poor Teresa.
It's pretty neat. Curtis is out there, a couple of videos of people swimming in the bay, and it's just like wild to see it, right?
Oh, I mean, that brings back the year that they built that Olympic-sized swimming pool on Main Street.
Yes.
They did some wild stuff back in the day that I don't think they'll ever do again. Like, I think it's too busy for them to ever do, like, a Pirates movie premiere kind of situation again.
So too.
All right. Question number two was, only once has Disneyland hosted a full marathon, and what year was that held? Teresa, you willed yourself back to a correct answer. It was 1995.
Good job, Teresa.
Yeah.
Tag, I might have considered a half point if you would have went with 97, but
that's okay.
3 years just a little too much.
That's okay. It's fair.
All right, moving on. Our third question was, from 1957 through 1964, a unique race was held in Disneyland. What made it so unusual? These races.
I'm so curious about this.
They went by the name of the Disneyland Pancake Races.
Pancake Races.
I remember pictures of this now.
I've heard of this.
Yeah, so they would run down Main Street holding frying pans, thanks to a sponsorship from Quaker Oats, and of course the partnership with Aunt Jemima. Becky Klein wrote about it in a Disney Magazine article back in 2004, describing the event. And I'll just read the beginning of it. Rose Pittman is running as fast as she can down Disneyland's Main Street, USA. Her hair is tucked underneath a scarf. She's wearing saddle shoes and an apron wrapped around her plaid skirt. She's also carrying a 9-inch skillet in her right hand.
Wow.
To like see video from those events.
So wait a second. So
running up and down Main Street.
Was the idea that they, like, was there a chat? Like, you had to keep, like,
you've got to keep the pancake in your skillet as you run.
Oh, okay. That's how
I've understood it. So,
okay.
And I think you might even like come up to ribbons that you have to flip the pancake over and catch. I didn't read thoroughly enough about it, but there are pictures and it is just glorious.
That sounds like a very unique skill.
Yeah. Wow.
In the article, Rose Pittman won $100.
Wow.
For winning the race in 1957.
Good job, Rose.
That's so fun.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was wild and absolutely incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, let's wrap this up. We got one more question left. And it is, we all know Walt Disney World and Disneyland have these running races. What other parks have held running events, not specifically just Run Disney? Curtis found running events for Disneyland Paris, Shanghai Disneyland, and Hong Kong Disneyland.
Dang it.
And if you want to count Tokyo, they did have a 2K parent-child run in 2016.
Fun.
So it's a bit of a stretch.
Wow.
Did I at least get like a half point? No, never mind.
No.
no, never mind.
You didn't breach the halfway mark on that one.
We should have just said all of the above.
All of them. You would have been pretty okay.
Yep, we should have said all of the above.
So, yep, running's a worldwide thing.
So cool.
So James had this link for this running through paradise, the swimming through paradise bay. So I need to, I want to see this. Where is it? Do they not have a picture?
I don't
think
they have a picture in that one.
Oh,
look, there's little floaties in the bay though. That's probably like the little markers. Very fun.
YouTube videos of people swimming in the bay as well. Oh, so you like Googled this?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, not your best week of trivia, but you know what? Sometimes this is the best thing because you learned so much because of it.
Exactly.
So who would have thought 6.5 years in this, you could still be learning a ton about Disneyland and its history. So listeners at home, if you have some great question ideas, maybe a cool theme, something timely, or just some crazy ideas about things that we need to know about, you can send them in to producer Vern and I. Our email is trivia@dlweekly.net.
Well, we will be back next week with more Disneyland news and information.
Until then, go out and enjoy the parks.
And a special thank you to Sidell for editing our podcast.
Please remain seated until the podcast comes to a complete stop and the doors have opened. Then collect your belongings, watch your head, and step carefully from the episode. On behalf of all of our crew, thanks for traveling with us, and we hope you have a happy and memorable visit here at DL Weekly.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.